Hello and welcome to another edition of Hardly Heroes. My name is Eddie and I'm joined by John D. You can follow me at EddieC85, that's Eddie with a Y. You can follow John at Jorge Blanco and the show at EC_Hero or Instagram at EC HeroCast. We also have a Tumblr, which we use kind of frequently. That's EC HeroCast as well. And then, of course, you can check me out on John's podcast this past week of the D-Blitz podcast. We did a nice mock draft, and Caleb's not here. He has a podcast, but when you're not here, you don't get to plug your stuff, so that's the rule. How is the weekend been to you, John?
Pretty good. I got to see Mortal Kombat in theaters, as we'll discuss later. Got to watch both the Falcon and Winter Soldier finale after it was partially spoiled for me. And it's Invincible. So
I managed to avoid spoilers for all three, so I was pretty happy.
Well, the spoiler for Falcon and Winter Soldier wasn't really a spoiler. It was what we all knew was coming anyway.
Oh, that's much better. Yeah, I had what was it? Avengers Endgame spoiled. It was someone said Iron Man dies, which I figured, but like, still. I didn't want to know that. So yeah, we got a lot to get into. We will start with the season finale. I guess series finale, because the new name is Captain America and Winter Soldier at the end. But we have The Falcon and Winter Soldier. Episode 6, One World, One People. So, here we have, again, just going off the condensed notes, but I did take a couple of my own. So, we get the debut of the new, and I would say improved, Captain America uniform that Falcon came in on, or Sam Wilson, I guess, rather. He busts through the window. We get the big reveal of the uniform. A very cool reveal, I thought. And that was, like I said, made by the Wakandans. So he comes in to stop the Flag Smashers attack that was happening at the GRC building. So I guess we'll start there. What did you think of the new uniform?
I liked it. I mean, we all kind of knew it was coming. We talked about it last week. It was obvious. But I thought they did a good job of like tweaking it a little bit. And the fact that he still keeps the Falcon wings was a nice touch.
Yeah, I was surprised about that because he made a point of saying, like, you keep him in the last episode, so I didn't know. But I liked it because he's not going to take the Super Soldier Serum, so...
I mean, I have a little bit of an issue with that, though, because it's a little bit of a technicality, I feel like, because, like, oh, he's not taking the Super Soldier Serum, but he has this suit made by the people who make literally the best, most powerful weapons in the entire world. So...
Yeah.
Like, at one point when he says something, I think, to Isaiah Bradley or something about how he didn't have to take the serum, and it's like, yeah, but you also have a suit made by the Wakandans, so you kind of did, even though you didn't.
Yeah, I think between the suit, the shield, and the wings, that kind of compensates, yeah. I suppose.
It's like, oh, I didn't do steroids, but I did juice the baseballs or cork my bat or whatever. Like, you're still cheating.
Well, as I spoke too soon, because stand by, we have a late edition coming in.
Uh-oh.
I know.
Breaking.
Yep, breaking news. He's coming. He's on the way. He's taking his sweet time. And
hello?
There he is.
God dear.
Did you already bury me softly in this womb?
No, we just said you weren't here, so we weren't going to plug your podcast. But since you're here, I guess you can...
Well, you guys know, of course, this drops every weekend. Mainline drops every Wednesday night after AEW Dynamite. And Thursday morning, you can listen to me on the Grave Consequences podcast. That is a part of the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We are here in late April. Mortal Kombat came out 2 days ago, right?
Yep, we were going to.
You forgot to plug your other podcast, Caleb. Caleb's also hosting Terminal Velocity, which is just him back and reviewing the last days of Velocity for everybody.
Yeah. That's me and Ernest the Cat Miller every Saturday night at 10 p.m.
It's on whatever Conrad network
he's on. Yeah, we're on the We're on the off Broadway version of ad free shows.
You know, Velocity had
ad built shows.
Velocity had some low key great matches and a pretty pretty like fun roster.
Was it like a Paul London Akio match from like 2003 that people don't shut up about?
Probably.
I don't know. All I think about when I think about random shows is the Daniel Bryan rolling in a ball Saturday morning slam match. That's my go-to.
Well, anyway, we had just discussed, we just started Falcon and Winter Soldier, and we just discussed the new threads for Captain America. What did you think of those?
They look nice, I guess. It is kind of off-putting to me that like they don't cover up his entire head, but it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take the, what did we have, the fake ears in the original Captain America movie. That was all-time worst.
Absolutely, but... yeah.
So, yeah, we get the big reveal. Carter accidentally reveals that she's the power broker to, you know, GSP. So, that's the, I'm guessing that was the spoiler that you got, John, that we kind of knew, but you know, it was either her or Val. So
no, it actually wasn't. It was, like I said, it was it really was the most obvious one, which was just that Falcon is the new Captain America.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So
I'd barely call that a spoiler.
Yeah, like I said, it only was because, like I said, we all knew it was headed that way with the whole story this year and him opening that case. But there was always a chance that they would have held it off till later in the episode or even another season potentially before he fully took on the role.
Well, the other, I guess the one bit of intrigue, like I said, who the power broker was, it is Agent Carter. She revealed to Batroc that it was her and kills him while Wilson attempts to reason with Morgenthau. Morgenthau's like attacking him a whole bunch and he's not fighting back.
Now, okay, continuity wise, I have an issue with Carter. Because didn't Carter early in the season help them fight off the Flag Smashers?
Yes.
Well, yes, but the Flag Smashers went rogue.
This doesn't really add up, I feel like, for me.
But again, like I said, the Flag Smashers went rogue.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, the problem with... and where are we at? Yeah, this is where... Yeah, Wilson attempts to reason with Morgenthau before Carter kills her as well. See, this was what I had a problem with, is, again, they're trying to make her the sympathetic person, which it's like 10 minutes earlier in the episode, she says the line, "We'll kill the hostages if we have to," and then 5 minutes earlier in the episode, she tries to kill the hostages. So, again, I get it, her cause isn't all that bad, especially when Sam breaks it down at the end, but like, stop trying to make her sympathetic. But, she literally tried to kill a busload of people.
Sorry to cut in, but Joel Schumacher had a character similar to this, and I've alluded to her before, but Joel Schumacher had a character similar to this in Batman and Robin named Poison Ivy, and even he was smart enough in that turd of a movie to not be like, oh, she's actually really sympathetic, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'll clarify, I didn't have like go away heat with Carly. I thought she was a great villain.
I absolutely did.
No, I did. I thought she was a great villain. I couldn't wait for her to get killed. I just wish it was like that's not how I wanted her to go. Like I wanted her to go because she deserved it.
Also, like, by the way, and a movie we'll talk about has shown us that, you know, we don't need these, oh my god, look at their motivation, villains in every single form of superhero content that we watch. Sometimes the pure evil will suffice.
Yeah. I don't know. I just... I was hoping it was going to be because Captain America... Well, just... not Captain America, but John Walker showed up, you know, in the Captain America outfit. I thought maybe he was going to do it. I didn't think new Captain America would, but I don't know. I definitely didn't think it'd be Carter, and I didn't think it'd just be with a couple gunshots. I don't know. I was hoping something else would happen, but she's dead, so.
Speaking of John Walker, though, I was surprised that a U.S. agent, at least in this episode, wasn't really framed as a heel the way that I thought he would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was glad that he got a bit of a redemption arc, because I just thought he, you know, I know U.S. agent, which we'll get to, you know, becomes a villain, or sometimes is, but I didn't think that the character that they had portrayed, I didn't think that I wasn't ready to, like, hate this guy yet. I mean, he went crazy. He had a, you know, he did kill a terrorist, but it wasn't
himself up, so yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that he killed a terrorist as that he got caught, and
but more that it's more that, you know, he killed someone who was surrendering.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I still felt like he's a decent guy, but I don't know, maybe he's not. I guess we'll see.
He's shades of gray for sure.
Yeah, well, he's apparently made up with Falcon and Winter Soldier because he was working with them. So, Wilson convinces the GRC to postpone the forced relocation of displaced people that Morgenthau died fighting for, and instead make an effort to help them. Which, I mean, it's hard to really say because there's literally nothing like this in the history of the world that we can compare it to. But, I mean, it's a tricky issue. I mean, the one guy raised the point, like, what if you came back and there's people living in your house? I mean...
Oh, you mean like Israel and Palestine or anything like that?
Well, if Israel, if half of Israel disappeared for 5 years, then perhaps, but...
Well, you could say they did.
Well, this is more worldwide, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's points on both sides, I think, and it's a really weird situation that would, I mean, the literal situation would never happen in real life, obviously, but...
Yeah, people wouldn't disappear, no.
Yeah, but I mean, if they did, it's like, I get it. I mean, some parts of the world, you'd be like, I gotta get out of here because there's not enough people here to maintain a quality of life. And then it's like, but also, if I disappeared for 5 years, something that was completely out of my control, and I just reappeared in my house, and it's like, oh, there's a family here. I don't know. Get the hell out. Like, I don't know what to do. Like,
you know, what I wish they would have, what I wish they would have delved into more a little bit is, the idea of, like, when the snap happened, it was half of the human population. But I feel like those numbers couldn't have been 50-50 everywhere. So, like, I wanted to see that, like, hey, if there were some cities where 100% of the population stayed and others where it went to zero, like, show a little bit more of that, like, decay and growth, which, I mean, they could have kind of done with Westview a little bit. But, you know what I mean? Like, if 100% of New Yorkers are still in New York, obviously it's going to be thriving. But then, yeah, if it's like a smaller town like Jersey and everyone's gone now, it's just going to literally go to nothing. Yeah. I wish they would have explored it a little bit more. Instead of being like, we kind of just assume that it's almost 50-50 everywhere now.
I would assume it, yeah, it was 50-50 everywhere. And the only where they only place they explored it was Westview, which apparently was, you know, never, I suppose, was a good town back in the 80s and 90s, as we're led to believe, but then didn't really bounce back from the snap. So, the remaining serum-enhanced flag smashers were caught by Barnes and Walker. They are sent to the Raft, which is this giant floating prison in the middle of the ocean. And, of course, Zemo's there, hanging out. But they are killed by Zemo's butler en route, so I guess no more flag smashers. At least none that we're aware of.
Oh, by the way, one real I need to get something out there about Carly Morgenthau real quick. She was a petulant child. Like, when Sam Wilson dared to oppose her, she's like, oh, you fell for that BS of all people? Like,
oh, yes.
Try to empathize. Try to see something from someone else's perspective.
I actually really liked that response where he's like, I'm trying something different because...
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why she would say it's BS. Like, oh, you're
it
just...
Makes her come across, it makes her come across as a child, though, that she can't empathize with someone. She can't see someone on perspective.
But not to get overly political, and I know I'm usually the most liberal of the batch here, but it does feel like a lot of the sort of, like, left-leaning, like, college-age student sort of mind frame, which is, like, the only way to do this is to oppose it and to oppose it violently. And if you have any sympathy towards the conservative side or any sort of, like, middle ground thought, you're wrong and bad and we can't tolerate. And, I mean, there's, don't get me wrong, there's elements of that on both sides. But I think Carly is just the sort of, like, AOC most leftist sort of character that we've ever probably seen in any of these movies.
Probably.
Yeah, no, I think that's what she is like that. But it's like with Sam, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm trying something new. I'm trying to actually be better with this. I mean, you know, he...
And that's why Sam, I think, does ultimately come across as a really good character, because it's like, he's a guy who clearly acknowledges the flaws in the system, who knows that it was like, there's a lot of improprieties and a lot of unfairness in the way things were built. But it's like, I'm not just going to also burn it all down because of that. And
yeah. I mean, and again, also not to get political, but it's like, there are lots and lots of black cops, and it's like, you know, they, and may, they might have various reasons for doing it, but it's like, yeah, I'm trying to make it better. You know, previously it wasn't perfect, but, you know, I'm just trying to make it better.
We talk a lot of wrestling, but even like Mustafa Ali has talked openly about how he became a cop because he wanted to change the system from the inside. There's always going to be people like that, and realistically, that is probably more effective than just standing on the corner yelling.
Yeah.
I mentioned last week that I really hope that Sam really comes off as like giving a great reason why he's, you know, taking the shield, because everything Isaiah said to him, you know, it's like, we knew Sam was going to be Captain America, but it's like everything Isaiah said to him, it's like, well, how is he going to respond to that? And I thought he, you know, he did this, he gave this great speech, as we said, and he'll later, you know, talk, did the, I guess it was like the Smithsonian, but he takes, you know, Isaiah and, you know, has the new display of, for him inside the Captain America exhibit.
That part got me. The speech I thought was really good, but the like placement of it was a little hokey. I thought the content was great, but the fact that he's like delivering it right after they just stopped the flag smashers and saved this like terrorist attack, I feel like that was a little forced. Like, I wish they would have found a sort of better or more, I know it's a superhero movie, but or a superhero show, but like a more realistic sort of placement of that, and I don't know where that would have been. But then, yeah, him showing Isaiah Bradley the statue kind of like hit me.
Yeah, that was really well done. And then, of course, I mentioned...
I am glad that John said Isaiah's last name, because I keep forgetting it, and I keep wanting to call him Isaiah Cassidy, and I know that's the guy at the Private Party.
Yeah, that would that's not him. But no. So we did get a rebranding of the old Captain America. So Val is with I don't remember her name, but John's wife, and they're sitting out, and he comes out in the new outfit, and she's like, "Well, you know, what do you think?" He's like, "Well, I like it. You know, it's kind of the same, but it's black." And she says, "Well, what are we going to call you, John?" And he says, "I don't know, Val." No, he says U.S. agent. But I figured everybody was going to do an Elaine joke or a Veep joke, so thought I'd take it old school with some Todd Margo. But yes, he's U.S. agent. So.
I thought the line is something like, "We don't need another Captain America, we need a U.S. agent."
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I was doing Todd Margo from Christmas Vacation. No one's seen it?
Nope.
Oh, Jesus.
When you said Todd Margo, I thought you were talking about that David Cross show.
No, in the Chevy Chase movie, Christmas Vacation, is the neighbor, Todd Margo. And Margo is played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Hmm. Sorry, man.
Oh, my gosh. It's only like the best Christmas special ever.
That's a holiday movie. I haven't watched it in a couple of years.
Well, you can watch it right now. Who cares?
No. Nope. I don't watch Christmas movies out of season.
Well, then watch it in the season. Man, I can't believe you guys haven't seen it.
It's been years, man.
That was a great joke. The listeners are laughing, even though it didn't land here.
I'm sure they are.
Anyway. So, yeah, they did the Captain America exhibit. Well, and then the Isaiah Bradley. And we got a mid-credit scene where Carter receives a full pardon. And then she gets her job back. And then she's on the phone with someone. Like, yep, I've got all the weapons and secrets that we could possibly want. So.
So that's what was a little confusing for me. What was she getting pardoned for exactly? Because, like, if they knew she was the power broker, then obviously you're not going to, like, give her access to anything again.
No, they didn't know she was the power broker.
Like, smash her, like, attack? Like, what's the, what was she getting pardoned for? Was there something that I missed? Or am I just forgetting something?
She did not, well, yeah, Caleb's right. They didn't pardon her for the power broker. They don't know that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What was it that she was actually even being told
up for? She didn't sign the Sokovia Accord.
She was, okay, so I'm trying to remember, because she was in Madripoor, where it's like the fugitive city, so I'm trying to remember that episode.
I've only seen the first Captain America movie and then the two Endgame movies, or Infinity War and Endgame. So I'm not familiar with, like, the in-between sort of Captain America stuff. So I didn't know if it was just something from that or if it was – because I don't remember anything in season that would have made sense.
So I'm trying to read and doesn't really say. I know she was a fugitive when the show started because, like I said, she was in Madripoor, but
– yeah.
Man, I am trying to remember.
I think it was, on the flight log to Little St. James Island, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
No.
That's why they were going to have her killed, but instead they were just like, let's just pardon her and make it easier.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to go back and rewatch. This is where I think it's good, and I've said it before, and I can't wait for the one for Loki. Those, like, Marvel Legends little shorts that they have, they're like, they did, I think, just two for WandaVision. I think they did four for this one. They did Zemo, Bucky, Falcon, and. But it's just like little short, like 7 to 12 minute clips where it's basically like a compilation of, like, this is this person's backstory until this point. So I have to go back and rewatch the one on Carter. Maybe that'll make it make more sense to me.
That should, yeah.
Okay, so in Civil War. Captain America Civil War, she aids Rogers by providing CIA intelligence, and it was later revealed that Peggy Carter was her great aunt, much to Rogers' surprise, since she aids Rogers' faction of Avengers by giving them their stolen weapons, she shares a kiss with Rogers before going into hiding. There you go.
Okay. That makes more sense, though.
It's so hard to remember all these movies. I mean, and she's not like she was like a major, major character, but yeah, there she is, power broker now.
Mm-hmm.
But we also watched Invincible.
Yes. I love Invincible so much.
Episode 7.
This episode was so good and had one of my favorite scenes in the show so far.
What was that? Or did we just get to it?
So you can get to it, because I don't want to, like, ruin the whole... I don't remember exactly when it happens. I don't want to ruin the lead-up to it, but... I think it's pretty early on.
It's called We Need to Talk. So after Debbie relocates to the GDA, Cecil explains the truth before both witness Nolan kill Cecil's associate. So, Donald Ferguson and several GDA agents, adding a neutral link, upgrade the Rudy clone, reluctantly euthanizes his progenitor.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
This is basically the human behind robot, right? Is what we're talking about now.
The what?
You're talking about like the human behind robot, right?
Yes.
Or no, just...
Yes. So, yeah, that was the big reveal that Robot is a weird, gross baby inside of a tube.
By the way,
was there another scene in the show with the baby? Because that's what I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember if this was the big reveal or if we had seen this baby before and not been 100% sure.
That was the big reveal.
Okay. It just seems so familiar. Maybe it's because I was thinking about like Krang with Ninja Turtles, but
it was crazy the way the Maulers explained about cloning and the way they showed it, to where it's like you see the hands reaching up and it's like that's the last memory of the weird fat baby, and then it's like the start of his memory, and it's like, yeah, this is how we'll never know which one's the clone, which one's the original. In your case, it'll be easier because one of you looks like you and the other one's this big blob. But, yeah, it was kind of crazy. I'm like, wow. Maybe that's why we don't do cloning, because that would be that'd be pretty freaky.
Oof. Yeah, watch The Prestige sometime.
Prestige? I haven't thought about that movie in a while.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I do like how Robot was like, give me a Rex clone, because Monster Girl seems to be into him.
Well, I mean, I liked Rex's reaction to this. Like, he just...
Oh, yeah. It was great, but it was also totally justified.
Yeah. So, he pays the Maulers, but then he also is like, well, you have to, you're still going to jail. So his van that he arrived in turns into a big giant robot. So
yes.
That was something.
Yeah.
It was a robot.
By the way, I read up on Rudolph Connors and his wiki, and that character is going to be very integral to the series if it goes for long enough.
Who's Rudolph Connors again? Is that the guy behind Robot?
Yes.
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah, I have a friend of mine that watches it, and He's read a little bit of the comics. He's big into Savage Dragon, which also makes Invincible. And he says that they're pretty accurate so far, but there's been a few differences. But yeah, he's a big fan of that, so kind of cool. Anyway, Rudy explained why he did what he did, and, kind of covered that. So Cecil buys time by talking to Nolan before retreating to deploy Sinclair's Remnin, I don't know, and a modified kaiju to kill him. So they, they're trying. They know Omni-Man's on his way. So he's trying this big satellite thing to kill him. That doesn't work. And then he sends this big monster after him, which so far seems to be working. So, with Amber unfazed, we got the big reveal that Mark tells Amber that he's invincible, but she figured it out already, which is pretty great.
She was insulted that it took him that long to tell her.
Yeah, that was the scene that like I loved, because it was like, first he tries to tell her outside on the door, and she slams the door in his face, and then she, and I thought they missed their chance to do the invincible, like, screen cut there, where when he goes, I'm, and then she slams the door. But then he flies into her window, like, in costume, takes the mask off. It's, like, supposed to be this big, big moment, and she's like, yeah, no, I know, I'm not dumb. I figured it out weeks ago when you were not showing up to anything and flying around. So I just love like that wasn't like, because so many superhero movies and shows have that trope of like, what, you're Superman, you're Spider-Man, who would have known? And she's like, yeah, no, I knew you're a superhero, you're just being a dick. Like,
yeah, well, it's funny when like wrestling fans can figure out way back when Retribution wore full body suits, we could still figure out who they were, It would be crazy that, like, someone you spend a lot of time with that wears a mask that covers just their eyes, you can't figure out who they are. That being said, it is hilarious that no one can figure out that Omni-Man is Mark's dad.
Yeah.
Nolan. Or, yeah, Nolan.
I assume Nolan just keeps a super low profile.
But the friend, I forget the friend's name, but the friend realized what? That he goes, Mr. whatever Mark's last name is.
Well, he told him. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess he is Omni-Man. Like, how many people look like J.K. Simmons, so. But, yeah, she was more mad that she didn't, that he didn't tell her and that she didn't trust him. But I kind of have to side with Mark. I mean, it's a high school relationship. How long do you think this is really going to last? But, well, but she dumps him, so I guess it's over. So.
Yeah.
Mark seeks Eve's wisdom, but she sternly criticizes his selfish behavior. When the two intercept Nolan to fight the kaiju, Cecil calls Eve to abandon Mark and rendezvous with the Guardians. Just as the Maulers revive Immortal, he flies off to battle Omni-Man and avenges his team's massacre. While Mark narrowly subdues the kaiju, news choppers capture Omni-Man killing Immortal on live TV for everyone to see. So much like John Walker, Omni-Man is
he's recorded. Been found out.
Yeah. So, not a great look.
Nope.
But
not a good look there, Chief.
No, not especially. And then Mark sees this, and he's a little confused by the actions of his dad as well. So.
Do you guys think there's any chance that there's going to be a face redemption story for Omni-Man where it's like he, like the old Avengers really were evil and that this whole like burnt face guy CIA type operation is just evil and that he really did, like he really was saving people by killing them? Any chance of that? Because I'm starting to get a little bit of that feeling.
One, they're not the old Avengers. They're the old Justice League. And two,
whatever.
I suspect that, you know, if we get an Omni-Man face turn, that's more of like a late season 2, early season 3 thing.
Yeah, I don't. He still hasn't given the reason why he did it, which is kind of interesting.
He's had plenty of opportunity to do it, too.
But he just keeps saying that, like, You don't understand. I had to. And maybe it is just like heel, like trying to make excuses. But I just feel like there's going to be more. And I don't know. And this show has been so good that I feel like nothing has really happened by coincidence or, you know, left sort of untouched. And I think that's going to come back at some point.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be a case of jealousy or something generic like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine if he has a good reason, but don't be like, well, I want to be the only hero around. Like, that's lame, so.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm hoping it's, like, that they were going to be turning soon or something. Like, I don't know. Or, like, that there's going to be something more to that.
I hope so. But, I guess we'll this see. Is, we only got one more episode of this. And then,
oh, really?
Yeah, eight episodes. And then I thought, for some reason, I thought Loki was going to be in a couple weeks. It's not till June 11th, so.
Good.
Man, we got a
Let's
ways
take our time
to go.
And breathe.
I'm more excited about What If. Like, that's. I was really big into those comics as a kid.
That's one that I'm really interested in, too.
Yeah, I loved the What Ifs as a kid. It was so fun. But yeah, Loki first.
Oh, Loki's first. Okay.
Yep. June 11th. Man.
So we're gonna the next few Hardly Heroes are gonna have to be our in our feelings Hardly Heroes.
Yep.
We got a lot next week with Invincible in the draft. So I'm not worried about next week, but it's the week after that'll be tricky.
The Braves had a doubleheader, combined 14 innings, and we got one hit in that time period.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, that was our Braves update.
Yep.
Well,
come back next, more Braves talk.
Well, speaking of fatalities, we watched Mortal Kombat, all of us.
I thought we were going to talk about the Chris Weidman fight again.
Oh. Well, you can if you want. That was brutal.
The leg break?
I saw it.
Oh, my God. I was watching that in my house, and I just shouted because that was horrific.
Yeah, I heard about it, and given its reputation, I will not be watching it.
Because I saw the Silva one live and got, like, disgusted and excited, because at the time I was like, oh, man, I loved Weidman. I had actually seen him fight in person before he even debuted in the UFC. And he's, like, a New York guy, so I was, like, super excited about that. And when Silva broke his leg, I was, like, of quite a few years younger than I am now. So I was really excited at the time, even though I was also disgusted. But this was, like, extra gross because it was, like, not only the way that it broke, but then the fact that he, like, fell back onto it after it. It just made it look doubly bad. It was really terrible.
Yeah, the Silva fight, I was watching that pay-per-view, actually. And it sucked because I love Anderson Silva, and that was not a great way to... I know that didn't end his career, but it essentially did.
I've seen him fight in person since that leg injury, which is crazy.
But yeah. I mean, he was already on the downward, yeah. But... But yeah, that leg break from last night was just really gross. But hey, it was in front of a sold out crowd, so that was something.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd last night too. I've been the most liberal here. I've been very like try to be as cautious as you can with COVID. But just the noise of that crowd was so good, and I forget how much crowds for everything, but especially wrestling and MMA. Help me watch things passively. And that's been like my biggest miss with wrestling. Because a lot of times when I watch wrestling, I look at my phone most of the time and then I'll look up for the big spots or look up for the promos or whatever. But it's like not having the genuine crowd noise there to like give you those cues of like, oh, something big just happened. Look up now.
Yeah.
I feel like it hurt. And having that last night made it so much more enjoyable to watch. And it also helped too that it was literally the quickest main card they've ever had. It was like 19 minutes where the next quickest main card was like 20 something as far as like in octagon time. It was almost like 10 minutes longer. I think it was like almost 30 was the second shortest.
Yeah.
But just fun fight after fun fight last night. I had a blast watching.
I mean, here's my thing. You could argue that Florida and Texas were too quick, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, I'll give them credit for trying. If it were me, I would say July 1st. That seems like a good time because every state now, you can get the vaccine if you're 16 and older. I get my second dose on Thursday. So, I mean, it's like most states have had since April or at least late March, and that's just 16 and up, not counting like the higher risk people. So the way it's like you've had at least 3 months to get it. Let's not wait around for everybody. If you're not going to get it by July, you're just not going to get it. So... let's, you know, sold out games now. Let's go.
I know in New York they just opened it up, I think this week, maybe even today, to where 16 and over can get it, and now you don't even need an appointment. You could just walk in and get it. But I've also, like, I have a vaccine site not too far from my house that I pass by when I drop my daughter off to my parents. And the line there has been, like, around the block almost every day. So I get holding off a little while longer. I think you could start to sort of gradually increase capacity at places. But at the same time, somebody's got to be the first. So you know what? If people in Florida are willing to do it, and I'm like, if it was Jersey or something, I might be a little bit more concerned. But I don't think there's a lot of people coming back to New York from Florida. So if they want to be guinea pigs, you know what? Let them do it. I'll enjoy watching it. And I just hope New York opens soon. But at least everybody has had a real chance to get vaccinated first.
Yeah, I mean, here in Ohio, we've had it since early April, 16 and up to get vaccinated. And I'm more concerned about the 50 and up crowd. So, and they've had even longer. So, I mean, like I said, if by July you haven't even had one dose, and as of now, I guess it's what half the country has had at least one dose, which is great. So I would hope by July we could be pushing, I don't know, 60-70% of the people. And there's always going to be people that won't get it. Okay, can't force them. But, I mean, it's like here in Columbus, we got this new soccer stadium opening in July. And it's like, it's supposed to be 30-40% full. It's like, why? Why not just go 100% by July? And I'll wear the mask. It's not a mask issue. It's a capacity issue. I'll do the mask. That's fine. But
one thing with the UFC that I didn't love is that they didn't require masks. Because like it's one thing to test the limits and be like, we're gonna go full capacity. I think it's another to go full capacity, mask optional. And it's like, that's a little bit scarier to me. But again, somebody's got to be the first, so be
yeah,
it, I guess.
I'm just, it's annoying where it's like one side is full capacity, masks optional. And then the other side is, you know, like Biden and Fauci. Well, maybe on the 4th of July you can have a small barbecue with your family. And it's like, I did that last year, and I was definitely going to do it this year. That's not an incentive, dude. You got to do something better than that. Like, that's nothing. My friend had the perfect analogy for Fauci. And I don't know how true this is in New York and Oklahoma, but it's definitely true here. Fauci is like an Ohio driver in the rain. I mean, it's like 20 miles under the speed limit. Some people turn their hazard lights on. It's like, dude.
I feel like in New York, everybody wants the speed when it rains. They're like, oh, it's fine. We're used to this.
No, Ohio. It's bad, but it's like, dude, I get being cautious, but you're like overly cautious. Like, well, a barbecue on the 4th. No, not a barbecue. I want a sold out baseball game on the 4th. Not a barbecue. Jeez, come on.
I have a problem with Fauci too, and I think maybe a little bit of it is Fauci not getting to be the star that he got to be for a little while. But I was all for Fauci most of the time. But it is starting to feel like, listen, you're going to deter people from getting the vaccine if you're like, well, even once you have the vaccine, you can't actually do anything. Like, that to me is just going to be more of a deterrent and set people back more. Where at least if you have the vaccine, then you could do X, Y, and Z.
As things go on, old Dr. Fauci there comes across like a child at someone else's birthday party.
Yeah, my thing on Fauci, he's definitely smart, I think he definitely means well, but man, he is a horrendous communicator. And when you're a doctor, you've got to be able to communicate. You can't just say, well, maybe we'll do a barbecue on the 4th of July, maybe? Like, what? Like he makes it come across as when you get the vaccine, like, not a whole lot's going to change. And it's like, A, that's not an incentive for a lot of people. Like, I have a friend who's getting the vaccine purely because he wants to be able to go to concerts in the summer. Okay, well, fine. Who cares what your motivation is? But just, you gotta incentivize people. You can't say, well, maybe you'll get a barbecue. That's not an incentive. People were doing that anyway, so.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, I watched on a HBO Max today. I was on a documentary binge today. They have a documentary called The Last Cruise, and it's about the Princess Diamond, which was the first big outbreak outside of China. It was a cruise ship that I believe left from Japan, but I think they ended up having like 700 cases on board of coronavirus by the time it was all said and done. But during the documentary, they're intersplicing like different news clips with the dates and everything. And because their whole outbreak basically happened in like February. The cruise set sail, I think, at the end of January, and it was supposed to be like a 2-week cruise. But there's like clips from Fauci in last February saying that like Americans don't have to wear masks and this and that. And it's like, I fully understand that we just didn't get it at the same level. But that is a part of why I'm like finding it a little bit excessive what he's doing, because I feel like he was so wrong at the beginning with being so lenient that now he's going almost too far overboard.
He's overcorrecting.
Yeah, where it's like you don't have to say that you can do anything now. Like, I do think we should be safe. I think absolutely still wear a mask as much as you can. But I think as long as you're wearing your mask, you're getting your vaccine, we can start to try to be back to normal as much as possible within those two things.
Yeah, I'll happily wear a mask. Like, I was excited a few months ago when he said, well, I think football stadiums will be full in the fall. Great. That sounds great. And now it's like, well, what about baseball parks in the summer and, you know, soccer stadiums in the summer and concerts in the summer?
Well, I feel like baseball to me is easier to do even than football, too, because, like, football, you only have 8 home games, so most teams, unless you're really, really atrocious,
or
sell
9.
Out. Yeah, well, not in this year. If you're an AFC team, But so most football games sell out or come very close to it. Baseball, there's so many home games that most of your games you don't sell enough tickets to really have people over the shoulder anyway. So to me, baseball would almost be like, yeah, you can open baseball at 100% capacity, and unless it's a rivalry game, unless it's a big Friday night game with big teams or, one of those things, you're probably still going to get a very sort of fractured crowd and a crowd that you can kind of space out a little bit more.
Yeah, and the only permanent indoor stadium is Tampa, and they didn't sell out even before COVID, so it's fine. I don't know. To me, July, not every state, every state's different, but if you started vaccinating on late March, early April, I feel like July is plenty of time for people to get their vaccines. And like I said, if you haven't got it by July, then you're probably just not going to get it. So
I think you basically need, in my opinion, you need about 6 weeks from when the vaccine is completely available to all adults, at least. But because you're going to need some time to factor in, like I said, the crazy long waits. Like I said, I know by my house right now, there's a place that you have to wait. It looks like probably an hour or more. And it's a lot of people can't do that on work days. So I get giving it a little bit of extra time. But I think once your vaccine is widely available in your state, about 6 weeks should be enough time for anybody who wants it to get at least the first dose.
I would hope companies would be letting people, because I know mine is, but I didn't have to ask because they already sent out an email hey, if you got to take off time from work to go get the vaccine, do it. And so that's why I'm getting mine Thursday at, 1:45 as I check my calendar. Anyway, so we get the vaccine. It won't kill us. We won't have a fatality. That was a tie-in. Mortal Kombat. And there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, turn it off now, I guess.
Yeah. We'll put that in the description as well.
Yeah. And as I said in the group chat, the only way for me to properly evaluate this movie, because I don't want to go through the whole plot, but I just made a pros and cons list of the movie, because the feedback for this movie is all over the place. I've seen, I took some friends to see it, and we all but one thought it was okay. The one that didn't said it was awful, and he said it was worse than Annihilation, which I think he's just exaggerating. But I've seen people on Facebook who say it's amazing, it was awesome, 10 out of 10. So I don't know where you guys are. I am kind of in the middle. I'll start off with my review. I gave it a 5 out of 10. So
I feel vindicated by this. I felt we had the whole argument a few months ago about is it going to be stupid and fun, or is it going to be good and fun? And I was no, it's going to be stupid and fun. And that's, to me, exactly what it is. I had no expectations that I was going to get a great storyline. I thought I was going to get violence. I thought I was maybe going to get some laughs. And I feel like I got everything that I expected going in. So, again, when I grade movies, I kind of grade them on a curve. So, for me, this is probably a 7 out of 10 because, yes, it could have been a lot better. Yes, it could have even been a lot funnier. It could have been more violent. But I feel like everything it did well. And there was enough sort of I'm not a diehard Mortal Kombat guy. I mostly just played the early ones as a kid growing up. But there was enough not so subtle fan servicey things that I was I enjoyed this movie a lot. And like I said, it was really, really dumb. The story is so stupid. But it was enjoyable.
Yeah, my thing is and that's one of my cons is the plot, is the story and this. I don't want to criticize without offering a solution, but the solution is it just works better as a TV show. This, to me, could be this could be the HBO Max, Game of Thrones. I think HBO Max needs its own little TV show, and I think it works well with Game of Thrones. It's a big cast, it's violent, so there you go. And while the plot isn't...
My problem even doing the series though, is... The basic concept of, unless you're going to go back and somehow explain how this makes sense, the entire concept of, these worlds have a fighting tournament, and if you win 10 of them, you can take over the other worlds, is just a really, really stupid concept to begin. I don't know how you make that concept not sound ridiculous and stupid.
Oh, I love it. It's great.
It's fun. It just is really, really dumb, because, how does that make any sense?
Look, I mean, it's
beat the other worlds 9 times in this combat system, But it, the tournaments only happen every so often. So if you win 10, then you definitely get it. Like, and I understand that, like, we have our pro sports are like, oh, well, best of seven or whatever. But there's just something dumb about, like, the tournaments only. Like, imagine if the Olympics was like, hey, you can win the ruling of the world if you win 10 straight Olympics. It just seems so stupid. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, it's the rules the Elder Gods set up, but... I mean, I don't know. It's you know, no, it's not Shakespeare, but it's you know, it's like I said, it's to me, it's similar enough to Game of Thrones that you could do something with it, and I think there's a lot of fun things that translate well. And the big thing is just there's so many characters, and it just to me that works better as a TV show. If you could do 10 1-hour episodes, you could really flush out a lot more than a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, almost none of these characters got really compelling backstories. Like, why is Cabal, like, the stereotypical New York City construction worker? Like, a lot of these didn't really make sense. But, like I said,
yeah,
overall...
I mean, yeah, Cabal referenced his history with Kano, which it's like, unless you know the game, you don't know what that means. So, I don't know. There was some good Easter eggs and, you know, fan service.
Kano screwed him over or whatever. But it was still like, why is Cabal like, hey, I'm walking here? Like, that's it was just such a weird thing. I don't know. Maybe that's how he is.
Yeah, there's, like I said, there's a lot you could have done, and I don't know. I mean, I'll go with my pros. So, the pros is unlike the first two movies, this had the gory fatalities, which I thought was great. It was nice to see some of them on the big screen. And not only just fatalities, but just, like, other moves. Like, Sub-Zero's Ice Clone, that was cool. I caught that. You know, Sonya's pink, whatever. The Arcana thing was weird. I don't know if we... I don't know. It didn't bother me. They probably spent too much time on it. And I wouldn't have done it, but I didn't hate it. I don't know. That's just me. But, yeah, the fatalities, that was great to see. But, yeah, most of the characters I would have just been fine with having superpowers. Like, I would have not questioned if Cabal, like, why does Cabal move fast? Who cares? He just does. He's from Outworld. That's why. Like, you know, if you want to do a TV show and explain it, okay. But, you know. But, yeah, the fatalities, seeing those on the big screen, that was cool. The other pro was Sub-Zero. I thought was a big, big upgrade from the first movie, which he was okay in the first movie, but the fact that he died when someone threw water on him, even as a 10-year-old, made no sense to me. It's like, he's the master of ice. Water is ice, essentially, so why does this kill him? That made no sense. So yeah, I was glad that Sub-Zero finally got a good showing in the movie. And then, of course, the star of the movie, Kano, was fantastic. And I hope he comes back.
How about the both of you get down on your knees and take turns sucking my sack?
Just Kano great quotes.
So Kano was very like Carl Urban in The Boys. And
yes.
It worked.
Yep. Yeah, and I have to believe that he might maybe make a return just because his eye was stabbed. So that's a good way that you could introduce the, you know, the metal eye that he has. Plus he already has the eye laser. So that would make sense. So I suspect he'll be back.
He was also just the only really good character in this whole movie outside of like, I forget the main character's name even, but outside of like the main character's daughter.
Cole Young sucked. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I didn't. I got Cole in my cons category.
But yeah, Kano carried the movie as far as like the comedy and making it interesting and fun.
Yeah, and I just think that, I mean, everyone, even the people, even my friend who hated the movie, loved Kano. So I just think that. Because they left it open for him to get the cyborg eye, I think because the popularity of the character, they're going to have to bring him back for the sequel, which they really, really led on to. I will start with my cons list, and we already talked about it. Cole, first off, just call the guy Stryker, Curtis Stryker, and call it a day. Like, you have like 500 characters to choose from, and you're like, well, we just can't pick. We'll just make up our own. Like, why did you need to make up your own character for this movie? I don't get it. Like, the whole thing with Scorpion being his, you know, great-great-great-grandfather, I didn't need all that.
I had to look up after, because like I said, I haven't really played the Mortal Kombat since the original, I would say maybe one or two. So I was like, is Cole Young just a character that I'm not familiar with? And it was like, no, he's made up for the movie.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I don't know why you need to make up a character for the movie. There's plenty to choose from. And like right there should have just been a big red flag for the writers to be like, wait a minute.
You all know the real answer to that is so that they can make more money adding the character to the video games. Practically, that's the reason.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure everyone saw this movie and they're like, oh, my God, I can't wait to play as Cole Young.
Well, but that's the thing, though. A lot of kids are going to – because I was surprised. I went to the theater and I saw –
who's going to let their kid play Mortal Kombat, dude?
I did.
My daughter is going to be 6 in a few weeks. I saw, no joke, at least 2 to 3 different kids in the theater yesterday younger than my daughter. Being taken to see the movie. So I don't know if the parents just don't care or somehow we're not.
Oh, no, you know what? I was like 7 or 8 watching my brothers play Mortal Kombat, so I guess I can see the logic, yeah.
I probably started playing around that age, maybe a little bit older. But I would say, but those kids are going to be the ones who are like, if they get the game, are going to want to buy the main character. Like, yeah. Because, like, well, he's the star of the movie, so I want to play with him, of course. Like, no, guys in their 30s like us are not going to be shelling out money to play for a boring MMA has-been.
But... yeah, and the fact that the guy that played him, the actor, just did not do a great job was a problem.
Well, there was very little like, emotion to it. Like,
oh, my family, oh no.
I did like the dynamic again, and I'm always going to be a softie for this because I have a daughter. But I did like the dynamic with him and his daughter. It felt a little bit like Frank Mir-ish, where Frank Mir has a young daughter who I think is now like basically fighting age. She's an adult, I'm pretty sure, like a young adult. But she started to like corner him for his fights and stuff. So I kind of like that aspect of it. But they could have done a lot more to like flesh out that relationship and to make him more sympathetic too. Because they talked about the idea that like he used to be a really great fighter and now he's not and he sucks. But I feel like there should have been more there to it. Like, because also, if he used to be great, why is he now taking fights for $200? Because we know from, like, the UFC, and the UFC does not pay well at all. Even bad fighters get to go to Bellator and make good paychecks later on in their career. Or not bad fighters, but, like, any fighter who was good who then becomes bad gets those, like, couple of great paydays still late in their career just off of name value alone. So, yeah. Him fighting the in this gym just made no sense.
Yeah, the other con was just the plot. I mean, I've mentioned, I think when we recapped WandaVision, it's like, you know, even though I took a college visit to Toledo for writing, I just decided I wasn't going to be able to be good enough to be a writer. And then I watched something like this with this plot, and I'm like, maybe I could have. You know, like, I don't know. It's like, they're killing all the champions before the tournament, and then it just ends with, like, basically a character select screen, like, I'll take this guy, you take this guy, which was very similar to how Annihilation ended. And if you're making me make comparisons to Annihilation, which is a horrendous movie, not so bad it's good, it's horrendous, that's not a good thing. There shouldn't be any comparisons between Mortal Kombat and Annihilation. We should forget that movie existed, but instead it reminded me of it, and that's not good.
Well, what was weirder to me with the character select screen was it wasn't really, like, matchups that made sense with the rest of the story. Like, they get there to a degree, but,
well,
like...
Kano and Sonya made sense.
Like, the fact that Sonya initially wants the girl when she has...
Melina.
Why wouldn't she have just asked for Kano off the bat? Like, why didn't Jax just want Sub-Zero? Like, Jax wanted the other guy, but not Sub-Zero.
Yeah, Jax wanted Nathan Jones.
Yeah, that's...
Which one's Nathan Jones?
What's that?
Which one's Nathan Jones?
Nathan Jones, the Colossus of Bago Road. You remember Nathan Jones?
Yeah, I know, but
oh,
I'm
okay.
saying...
Yeah, oh, which character? Yeah, he was Rico. Rico, whatever. He wasn't even like a... He's not even like a well-known Mortal Kombat character. I was surprised they even included him.
They did nothing to establish him in this movie, either. He was just
He was just guy with hammer.
Also, the not Katana character, who I didn't know, I just assumed it was Katana at first because of the teeth.
Melina.
They established basically nobody on the heel side besides Sub-Zero. It was the only one that got, like, some good story to him.
I thought Shang Tsung had some inspiration.
No, that was my other con, is Shang Tsung just didn't really do a whole lot, and Goro was completely wasted. Like, he was just...
Goro was... Like, he looked cool, but the Goro, that was so deflating, because as a kid, Goro was the biggest deal. Like, I remember, like, dying to play with Goro, and then it was like, nah, Goro's just defeated in, like, a few minutes.
Goro was tough to beat in the arcade game, and I'll tell you this, as a bit of a Mortal Kombat historian, Goro, like, okay, when Kung Lao's, like, I'm the relative of the great Kung Lao, which, was the, because, you know, Outworld conquered the other realm 10 to nothing. Then it went to Earthrealm, and it lost its first tournament because Kung Lao's, you know, ancestor won the tournament.
Let you off, but I forgot earlier. That was going to be my other question, too. Who are these officials? Who is this athletic commission of the Interworld tournament
that they're just turning a blind eye
to Outworld just flat out ignoring the rules? Like, who is
just
this
the Elder Gods.
So the Elder Gods just don't watch at all. They're like,
no, they watch.
They're like, no, the Elder Gods are like Jack Tunney, and they only come out when it's absolutely necessary.
Exactly. Outworld breaks the rules a lot, but yeah, Outworld lost its first attempt at Earthrealm because Kung Lao Sr. won the tournament, and then Shang Tsung recruited Goro, who helped them win 9 straight, and then it's like, oh, well, Goro hasn't met Cole Young, the washed-up MMA fighter, who's going to just whip his ass, and it's like, that sucked.
Did they not explain any of that in the movie? Because I feel like we heard that they won 9 in a row, but we never heard, like, if they were stopped at 9 in the past or anything like that. Like, that to me right there is a more interesting story than what they decided to tell in this movie.
I told you, Mortal Kombat has some interesting stories because, like I said, the first try, they got beat. And then they came back with Goro, who just helps them win 9 straight. In fact, I don't know if you remember the TV show Mortal Kombat Conquest, which aired after Nitro in like 98. That was about Kung Lao Sr. Yeah, that was a thing. It had like one or two seasons, but it was about Kung Lao Sr. and the very, very first Mortal Kombat tournament on Earthrealm. But I think because they picked such an obscure character that it didn't really catch on, and it wasn't very good.
Oh.
But that's what happened, is Goro won 9 straight for them, and they build him up kind of in the movie, and then it's like, he's just going to lose to Cole.
Well, yeah, I would say there's the big reveal of, like, the doors open and Goro comes in, but then it's, like, nothing after that, really. Like, I know they send him after Cole, and that's, like, I guess a big deal. But
yeah, he was,
which just seems weird.
Goro was done better in the 95 movie.
Also, was I wrong? Did Cole never really get... Oh, no, he gets, like, flames or something, right? I was saying, did he never really get powers? He has, like,
metal armor or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to say, a couple of pros, though. I do like the sort of, like, obvious fan servicey things. Like, I noticed at one point on the wall when she's going through, like, the history of the tournament and them trying to find the information out or whatever, there's, like, very clearly a Nightwolf picture, it seemed like to me, in one of the articles. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Yeah, there was Nightwolf, a Katana fan. There was the thing that Kano tried to steal was Shinnok's amulet. There was a carving on the wall that people think is Kotal Kahn. So, yeah, there was some good Easter eggs, I thought. Oh, but the other con I had real quick, this is just a quick one. I was really excited when they zoomed in when Jax got teleported to fight Rico. it was on the pit. And I was like, hell yes, we're getting the pit. And then he just does the thunderclap to his head, and he's like, whoop, that's all. I'm like, wait a minute. You purposely showed the pit and didn't use it? This is like, I think we used this analogy last week, but this is layup. Yeah. This is drive into the hoop for a layup, no one around me, and I just bang it off the rim. Like, what a fail. How did you screw that up? Nobody wants to see Jax's big thunderclap. Like, I want to see Jax just uppercut this Nathan Jones dude for making me watch his crappy matches into the pit, and he has to fall down into the spike pit. And then he could have used the same line of like, oh yeah, these sons of bitches work, or whatever he said. Like, yeah, that would have been much cooler. The pit. Yeah. Like, how do you do the pit and not do the pit fatality? That would annoy me, but anyway, that's all my cons.
I did enjoy the hell out of the gnome, though. Because there's, like, the scene when they're sort of going their separate ways where Kano spits and it lands, like, right in the gnome's hand or whatever, like, little garden gnome outside of the trailer. And then later on, she shoves the garden gnome into his eye. That made me laugh. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I gave the movie a 5. It just, I know what it could be. It could be similar to a Game of Thrones, and maybe one day someone will pick it up as a TV series, because I think it'll work then. In fact, there was a YouTube TV series on it that was kind of cool, and there's a YouTube movie. It's very low budget, but it's actually pretty good. So
this kind of reminded me of the 2017 Power Rangers movie for some reason.
A little bit.
I see. The analogy that I made, and I don't remember if I did it on the show or in the group chat, but at one point I had said that this was basically, just based off the previews, this was feeling like if they made an Avengers movie without any of the preceding like Marvel movies. And I think that's ultimately kind of what it was. It felt kind of like Avengery if you didn't have the backstory of the
characters. Or Justice League, in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a whole movie on Scorpion and Sub-Zero, but I just think it works better as a TV show, honestly.
I actually did, for as much as I hated the story and stuff, I did like the idea of Scorpion, like, being stuck in hell for all that time and learning how to master the fires of hell, and that being how he eventually came back. Because all I could think about the whole movie is I was like, okay, how is Scorpion coming back? And when he debuted with the, get over here, I popped for that. I like that moment a lot. As cheesy as it was, as predictable as it was, I really was a sucker for that spot.
Did you pop for fatality or flaws?
No, I didn't like those. I like to get over here because you have to, but flow, like that's not victory. A natural thing people say when they win a fight.
The flawless victory was funny though to me. Like it's stupid, but. Again, I expect a stupid movie. I'm not going in expecting Green Book. I'm going in expecting Mortal Kombat. So
yeah. Well, in the movie on YouTube, Mortal Kombat Legacy, there's a when they build the robots, Cyrax and Sektor, they beat up one of the robots and kill it, and they're like, test subject terminated, fatality. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. They made it make sense, but nobody would say fatality after they win a fight, but. There was one funny moment
next
that happened.
I'll use that.
Yeah, there was a funny moment happened in the theater, which is another reason why I miss crowds. But our theater was about as full as it could be. But when Sonya said, "Well, I don't have the marking. I'm not a champion," someone in the theater just yells, "Wah wah!" And, like, the whole place just popped. Like that was great. It was really that was funny.
The only pop my theater had was when. Kano gets his power. And he's like, yeah, you effing please. And like that was like, I feel like the one thing that everybody laughed at.
Yeah, Kano got a lot of laughs, but that was the crowd adding commentary that people appreciated.
But yeah, Kano was good the whole movie. We didn't even talk about like Kano was like, I just beat the Lizard Man and whatever. And I don't know. He had a lot of good lines like when he was him.
And Reptile was okay. I didn't have a big issue with that. He's a main character, but not super important, I don't think. I was okay with that.
You know what I think ultimately hurts?
Hey, real quick.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, John. How many ninja characters are there in Mortal Kombat lore? Hold on.
There's a lot. Are you counting the robots or just people?
Just like Scorpion and Sub-Zero and Reptile and so on.
Oh, yeah, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, which, by the way, Sub-Zero, not the one that really kills Scorpion's family. It was Quan Chi in disguise as Sub-Zero. But yeah, Sub-Zero, Ermac, Rain. Ermac, I think, is actually a joke, and he materialized into a character. I forget how that works, but yeah. And then they've got some females. You got Jade, Frost. I'm just doing off the top of my head. We're just talking people that cover their face, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Noob Saibot, which is Sub-Zero.
Okay, they gave a hint at that, I feel like, at one point, too. Smoke also, right? Is another one?
Yeah, Smoke. But yeah, they did give the Noob Saibot Easter egg when, like, Sub-Zero takes off his vest and he's wearing all black. So there's that.
But yeah, I think they mentioned the name at one point, or like they say something that sounds very similar. I don't remember the exact part, but like I said, I'm not a huge Mortal Kombat guy, but that's why I like that. I feel like the references were sort of like blatant enough that if you have played like the original games, you would have gotten it. You didn't have to like be up to date on the newer ones and the more involved stories.
Yeah, I will say. Before the movie, I'd heard the rumors that Miz wanted to play Johnny Cage, and I was like, "No, we gotta have a serious." But now it's like, you know what? At this point, go for it.
Sure,
like, who cares? Like, if you're doing like a serious Game of Thrones style show, no. But based on what I saw, fine, do it. I don't care.
And what we saw from Cole Young, especially, like, yeah, he'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, Miz is not a good actor, but Cole Young, Louis Tan is really not good.
If you had to pick an established actor to play Johnny Cage, who would you have picked?
Denzel Washington.
Yes.
Obviously not.
Well, why obviously?
Oh, Cage is white.
Oh, okay. So Denzel Washington can't play this character because of the color of his skin. Got it.
And he's a lot older.
You should have let off with that.
Well, I mean, I think both are valid reasons. I would say for Johnny Cage,
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, that's actually not bad. Yeah,
yeah, I might go with Channing Tatum. But he has that, like, I feel like he could pull off like cheesy action hero.
Of course he could.
Actually, would probably. Like, I mean, if maybe Cena's a little old now, but if Cena was a little bit younger, Cena could kind of be the perfect Johnny Cage.
Yes.
You know who'd be a good Shao Kahn is The Rock. I mean, find me an actor who's bigger. I mean, you'll have to do a little bit of CGI with his body, but, like, the base is there as far as, like, an upper body. You're not going to find an actor with a bigger upper body. So just throw a helmet on him and call it a day.
Oh, that was the last thing I wanted to say about this. I think what really hurt the movie, too, is that, like, the coolest face that they have, and this kind of was pro wrestling of it, but the coolest face they have turns heel halfway through the movie. So, like,
exactly, yeah.
Like, Kano was the only really good, interesting face. And then they're like, oh, we're just turning Kano heel. So now it's like nobody on the face side is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Nobody on the face side is somebody I really want to root for.
It's like, very WWE of them.
If you had kept Kano, like, face the whole time, or even had Kano be more of a tweener, like, I think you could have had more fun with some of the fight scenes, some of the dialogue and stuff. But Kano as a heel was just like, eh.
And then they had to bring back the old guy, Scorpion, to do the main event. So, very WWE. But, yeah, like I said, I'd give it a 5. I would see a sequel, but I would prefer a much better plot.
Can you just say the words, John, you were right? Can you just say that?
Well, look, I'm not going to say that because you could.
Right,
here's the thing. You could have made this like a Game of Thrones.
Well, we weren't arguing what they could have done. You could make
That's what I was saying they could have done. I hadn't seen the movie. I didn't know if it was going to be just a dumb movie.
The history of Mortal Kombat. And everybody who saw the trailer, I think, knew what they were getting into with this movie. I don't think anybody watched that trailer and went, man, this is going to be a serious, great story that I'm going to be emotionally involved in.
I mean, it, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, the source, you can have great source material and be a bad story, like the movie Pearl Harbor. I mean, it's one of the most important historical events, and the movie's garbage. So you can have source material that, yeah, it might be goofy with 10 tournaments and whatever, but it could still be really cool and, you know, like, okay, I said, Game of Thrones-like, but
sure,
instead
but, okay,
they went the opposite route and just went for gory fun, which, okay, that's fine. I'd have preferred the other way.
But if you're going to make a Super Mario Brothers movie now, which they really, really should do, I can't believe that's never gotten rebooted, but if you're going to make a Super Mario Brothers movie now, nobody is going into that expecting Oscar-caliber, great, in-depth storytelling. Like, they could, in theory, do it, sure. Like, there are elements there that you could really flesh out, and you could do an adult sort of Mario movie if you wanted to. But nobody's expecting that. Nobody thinks that's what it's going to be. And I feel like that's what Mortal Kombat was. Mortal Kombat was the nostalgia, like, for when we were kids. They weren't going off of, like, newer sort of, like, story Mortal Kombat. They were going for, like, hey, this is the fun game that you remember at the arcade from when you were a kid where you would just try to be as bloody as possible.
Yeah, I don't know. I was hoping, like I said, I was hoping that we would get... because, like, I mean, like, we just saw Sonic and Detective Pikachu. And look, I wouldn't say they're Oscar winners, although Sonic, given the fact that we had barely any movies last year, should have gotten a nomination, but that's beside the point. I mean, one's a hedgehog that's really fast and collects gold rings, and the other is Pokemon. And it's like, those were good. I mean, they weren't, like, you know, Oscar movies, but, like, they were good, and they had a good enough plot. And I thought you could have done that with Mortal Kombat. And even the first movie did. I mean, there was a lot of slapstick, and they ignored a lot of the history of the game. But other than that, it's like the first one had a decent enough plot, whereas this one was barely a plot, and that was a problem. And it's like, I just wish they could have, you know... I wouldn't have done any of the stuff that they did as far as a plot, but the action scenes were fine. Kano was great. Who else was great? Sub-Zero was great. Scorpion, for what we saw, was great. So I can't hate it, but I just, like, this was, like, Game of Thrones' final season, when I would have preferred Game of Thrones', like, first couple seasons, if that makes sense.
I'm just gonna throw one more thing out there that I kind of wish they would have done. Speaking of, like, fan service-y stupid stuff. With the whole story of, like, Sub-Zero trying to find and kill all the members of the family, but the baby being the only one to survive, I think you could have worked that into doing... I don't know if Raiden would have been the one to do it, because he has all the, like, spoopy powers or whatever. But I think you could have done a Bivality with one of the heroes, and really would have popped me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'd wish they didn't go down this route. I don't hate it, but it's like, it just could have been something pretty good.
You know what I want to add to, though? Just one. I think this will actually be my last point. As much as I enjoyed it, and I thought the violence was pretty good, I actually kind of wish there had been more violence. Like, I feel like watching The Boys and Invincible and stuff like that almost felt on par with how violent Mortal Kombat was. And I almost wish they would have pushed it just a little bit further and got a little bit more graphic, like do more of the like body ripping and or like, you know, let me see somebody's like full skeleton ripped from their flesh, like just get a little bit more graphic with it.
It's funny you mention that, because as I'm reading the Wikipedia, and by the way, the following is not my opinion. I think this is insane that this was ever considered, but I'm just going to read it. In April of 2021, McCoyd revealed the film came quite close to the line of getting an NC-17 rating by Motion Picture Association, saying in full, what we had to be a bit careful of was you can get to NC-17 territory pretty quick. It's a different in a video game where it's not real human beings. When you move this across to reality, different set of things start to happen in your mind, and you get rated slightly differently. So there were certain things that were in the game that were blah blah blah. This was completely ridiculous to even consider this as NC-17.
The boys is TVMA, but the boys, you have like heads exploding, like people, all sorts of like insanity. I think you didn't. There is no way you would have gotten it. You could have been more violent and not had NC-17. I think for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. We got a trailer for the new Saw reboot, Spiral. I would say probably every Saw, except maybe the first one, was more violent than this, and they were all rated R, so I don't know. Other than the hat fatality, the buzzsaw hat, none of the fatalities were, like even slightly cringy, but I don't know, the idea of putting your head in a buzzsaw is kind of, like, a little gross, but it's like, it's just this big vampire woman, so I didn't feel that bad about it, but yeah, I didn't... To me, this was R, and I would have never thought, like, wow, they really pushed the limit there. No.
It almost feels like this could have been pulled back and been PG-13 pretty easily, to be honest. It feels closer to, like, if you had to say either PG-13 or R, or NC-17, I feel like you would have had an easier time trimming back a little bit and getting to PG-13 than you would have adding enough to get to NC-17.
Yeah, and
there was nothing sexual. There was very little, as far as like even cursing and stuff with the dialogue. Like, yeah, there was violence, but like I said, even the violence seemed relatively tame. It was just for like if it was a different fighting movie, I think it would have been, or just a generic action movie, it would have been great. But with it being Mortal Kombat, I think everybody expected a little bit more. Like I said, I still enjoyed it. It was fun. But.
Well. I'll leave with this. If you don't mind low budget movies, and I think this movie's budget was like less than $10,000, so keep that in mind. Mortal Kombat Legacy on YouTube is pretty fun, and that's probably the best Mortal Kombat movie. But again, I would still recommend the web series that Mortal Kombat did that's also on YouTube, where each episode is like the name of a character, so it's like. That's pretty much how you have to do it. So, yeah. But a lot of content this week. And next week, we got NFL Draft and Invincible. So.
Yeah, so next week's probably, I don't know, it's up to you guys, but probably won't be recorded at the usual weekend time because that'll be day 3 of the NFL Draft. Unless we record and watch at the same time, because I know day 1 and 2 are more important. But...
Yeah, I kind of keep day 3 on in the background. I mean, it's hard for me to care about, the fifth round pick.
I usually for day 3, and I used to go to day 2 and 3 when it was in New York. It's a really fun experience to go to the draft. But day 3, I feel like rounds 4, I'll usually watch very closely. By the time round 5 comes, I'm kind of like in and out looking for the team's pick. Usually by 6 and 7, I'm just checking on my phone. I usually like am out doing something at that point. But with me having the football podcast and being more familiar with a deeper portion of the class this year, I may try to actually watch every round.
Yeah, and I was at the Michael Orr draft, so technically I was in the movie The Blind Side.
Huh.
Somewhere in the crowd. I'm waiting on my royalty check.
I was going to say, yeah, did you sign up for SAG and all that?
Oh, I wish. That's like the best benefits. But I didn't get my royalty check. What's going on? I thought that's how that works. But
I went to, where did I go? Yeah,
didn't that win an Oscar?
I think it got nominated for one.
You were in an Oscar-nominated film.
Was it Sandra Bullock? Yeah. Didn't she get win Best Actress for that?
I think I was at Radio City when they filmed Draft Day, or right before, or after they filmed Draft Day. I don't remember. They didn't, like, film it. I think they, like, maybe filmed crowd shots when we were there.
Oh. Well, no matter what. Yeah. Mac Jones, no matter what, to the 49ers.
No matter what.
Yeah. I'm just checking real quick. Yes, Best Picture nominated, Best Actress won. So, yeah. I was in an Oscar-nominated film, y'all. Suck it.
Oh, did anybody see what
Did they say what won Best Picture yet this year?
Yeah, it hasn't been announced yet, but I have not seen any of the movies.
I looked into it. I think it was this movie called D's Nuts.
That's not true.
I'm going to just drop Kayla from the call now. One moment.
Don't do that.
No, the one that was favored to win, I'm trying to even look. The one that was favored to win was one of the ones I hadn't even heard of. So.
Was it The Sound of Metal?
I've seen The Father, I've seen Minari, and I've seen Promising Young Woman. I think of the three, Minari seems the most likely to win.
I think that's what's favored.
But, well, Minari was really good. It's just, it kind of had the perfect Oscar, like, it was kind of funny, but also sort of boring with a kind of, like...
Yeah.
No.
You remember back when Oscar...
No Man Land is the favorite.
When Oscar winners were actually good and not just made to win Oscars?
Well, I feel like some of the recent ones have been good. Like, I loved Green Book. I thought Green Book was hilarious and genuinely good and deserved winning Best Picture. Parasite, to me, last year... if you guys haven't seen Parasite... especially when we talk about like movies like Invincible and stuff like that, Parasite, or shows rather like Invincible, Parasite, I mean, it's not superhero at all, but it's very similar as far as like that sort of like funny, biting humor, but then also being gory and violent.
I almost rented it at Family Video once, and I was just like, oh, you got to read the whole thing. I'm just not in the mood to do that right now.
I was a little like tentative with it, but because I was like, it's a foreign movie. They're two up their own behinds. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it and I was like, no, Parasite is genuinely great and fun. And everybody should watch Parasite. So at least the last 2 years, I think those are the last 2 years. And I liked Moonlight, I think, which won. So actually, I feel like most of their best pictures have been pretty good. I was furious when La La Land almost won because I thought that was an abomination. That was one of the only movies I've actually stopped watching. That and Beastly.
What did La La Land beat or lose to again?
Moonlight.
Okay, because I remember that was the one where Warren Beatty announced the wrong winner.
Yeah. I liked Moonlight a lot, so I was glad when Moonlight was the actual winner. But La La Land was a flaming piece of garbage. And I like cheesy musicals. Like, I love Hamilton. I love Rent. I'm not opposed to, like, corny singing the whole movie sort of things, but La La Land was just so bad, at least what I saw of it. And I've only ever seen the first half, so maybe it really turns around and gets good in the second half. But the first half was so bad that it was literally the only movie besides Beastly that I've ever actually turned off and not finished.
Well, I hope next year, Nobody. Almost. Nobody wins Best Picture because it's the best movie I've seen all year.
It's
not a big sample, but it's a high bar.
It's definitely the most fun, for sure.
Well, I have a great quote to go out on from the new Captain America that I thought was a pretty cool quote, unless you guys have anything.
Nah.
I mean, other than the Kano quote that I already used, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, this is as he's flying by the helicopter, and he just says, "You've earned this ass whooping."